Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
You graduate from Washington and Jefferson, and you send letters to, at that time, to all 28 teams?
And I got 28 rejections.
How do you ultimately get into the NFL then?
Persistence.
Game Time with Boomer Esiason. This week's guest is the most powerful man in sports, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. Presented by Geico.
Although today's guest was the son of a United States senator from New York, he elected not to go into politics, although some may differ with that idea. After earning a degree in economics from Washington and Jefferson College in 1981, he instead decided to make his father, Charles Goodell, and his family proud by working to become commissioner of the National Football League. Amazingly, 25 years later, he succeeded Paul Tagliabue in that high-profile, high-pressure role. And since then, it's been quite the ride, to say the least. It's my pleasure to welcome in Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL. Roger,
thanks,
good
Bill.
To see you, man.
Thanks. Glad to be with you.
You know, I was reading your bio, and one of the interesting things, we're about the same age. You know, I wanted to become the NFL quarterback that I became. You wanted to become, at a young age, the NFL commissioner. How does that become a dream that young?
You know, something about it around high school years, I was truly in love with what Pete Rozelle did. I admired him so much. And he really became sort of a role model for me and career-wise. I felt like that was a way I could contribute because I didn't have the skills of a boomer and I couldn't play at that level. But I knew I wanted to contribute to this game some fashion. And when I saw Pete and followed him, I said, that's what I want to do. And so I focused myself. I studied everything he did. I got every opportunity I could to understand how the business of football works. And then I just worked towards it as soon as I graduated from college.
Yeah, it was amazing. Washington and Jefferson College.
Yes.
Now, what drew you to Washington and Jefferson College?
Well, I actually was interested in playing college football. And so I was, one, recruited there, but I also was thinking about Pitt. But I decided to go for the education. It was part of that decision. I hurt my knee and I said, listen, this is what I should do. I should follow my path to try to work for the NFL, which is really my focus. I wasn't foolish enough to think that I was going to become commissioner of the NFL.
I know it's a hard job to get a hold of, I can tell you that. It's harder to get that job than it was to become an NFL quarterback. So you graduate from Washington and Jefferson, and you send letters to, at that time, there were 28 teams in the league, right? So you sent letters to all 28 teams?
And I got 28 rejections. And I sent several others to, you know, the league office, management council. I think I had 51 rejections.
So 51 rejections, how do you ultimately get into the NFL then? How do you get into the NFL office?
Well, a little
office?
Bit of it was begging and persistence. And, you know, I like to say there's a fine line between persistence and really going over the line. And I just kept trying to show that I was committed to doing this and that I had something to offer, I had value, and that I wasn't going away. And finally, the guy who finally offered me an internship, he said, listen, it's clear you're not going to go away.
Right.
So we have an internship. And he said, if you can be here tomorrow morning, we'll have an interview. Well, I was in Pittsburgh. And I said, I'll be there. So I drove all night to get there.
Wow.
And I got the interview. I got the internship.
I also read where you were an intern for the New York Jets for a year.
Yes,
did you
sir.
Leave the league office? You started in the league office, then you went to the Jets.
Once I finished my internship, which would have ended in January, they said, why don't you stay on? If you want to stay on as an intern, we'll keep you on. by August, the Jets intern at the time was Ron Howard, who moved to the Eagles. And
yeah,
they
okay.
said, we need somebody to fill in here. And it was middle of August. And so I said, absolutely. And so I went there. And it was one of the best experiences I had because I got a chance to be on the club level, had a chance to sort of spend time. My primary job was to work with the players and setting up their interviews. And the experience of being on the club level that I was able to take back to the league was extraordinary. And some of those relationships I have till this day.
Yeah, it's amazing that you end up going from the Jets back to the league. And not only are you back at the league, you're running the league. In October 2005, the year before Roger Goodell became commissioner, Arizona defeated San Francisco in Mexico City in the first regular season NFL game played outside the United States. Surely he noticed the 103,000 fans in attendance, and under his watch, international play has expanded considerably. And, you know, from games in London to Mexico City, I guess the appreciation for American football and the love of American football is out there. I mean, many of us don't see it here in this country, but you see it because you travel to these games. What has the experience been like for you?
We have five games this year, four in London and one in Mexico City. And I would tell you that every year I go back, the fans are more sophisticated. They are more serious about the game. They really now fully understand the game. And I think a lot of that's due to our games overseas, and I think also media. You know, we're able to reach our fans now in a way we never were able to in the past.
Yeah, the NFL, since I played, has grown exponentially. It's just been crazy. And I just wonder, you know, do we ever see a full-time team over there in London? I mean, is that what's coming next?
Well, I don't know if it's coming next, Boomer, but I would tell you that when you look at London, you see the quality of the fans and the number of fans. I think we have 15 million fans there. 24 million people watch us on television. The corporate base that you have there in the media business there is no question in my mind that they could support an NFL team. I think the real question still for me and others is that can we do it in a competitive way? Competitive not just to the team in London, but obviously the other 31 teams.
Well, yeah, I would think so, too, unless you'd have to add another team, right? I would imagine, unless you're going to move a team.
Yeah, right? And I don't think we'll expand right now, and so that's another issue is what team would play there. But, you know, scheduling it for the regular season, I think we could work our way through. What is difficult would be the postseason, which none of us know what that'll be.
Speaking of growth, you know, the NFL Network, that you are basically the father of, if you will, has exploded. And what has exploded along with it is the draft. And watching you on the draft, and especially now that you've gotten this thing moving around the country and you see how many fans are showing up to the NFL draft to hear where somebody is going to play football for the next 5 years, it's nothing short of a miracle. I've never seen anything like it. Could you have ever expected that?
My first draft in the NFL, I think, was the year you were drafted. And I started working on the draft. That was part of my project, and I loved it. And I always believed there was potential with that draft, but I would have never imagined it would have grown like this. And, you know, I think the first big move we made were bringing players to the draft so people could actually see their reactions. Mm-hmm. The second was moving into the prime time, and now the third is, I think, you know, moving it around from city to city. It's become a huge event, has tremendous economic impact to the communities. But the most important thing to me and the thing I love the most is we're celebrating these great young players coming out of college. So we're in many ways celebrating college football, but we're also celebrating them as they realize their dream. And to be there and to be part of that moment when they get drafted, you know, that emotion that you see out there is real.
I watch you guys at your drafts, and a number of you guys get booed before the draft even starts.
Yes.
it's a political part of your job, and sometimes you got to make decisions that are not going to make people happy. I understand, I think most people do. But you're opening the draft. It's supposed to be an exciting day, and then here come the boos. What is that like from your perspective?
It's actually fun for me in many ways because they're reacting, and they're part of it, and they have the right to do it, and that's good. I would tell you the two times I remember, the year we had the lockout in 2011 at Radio City, the boos were so strong I could feel it physically.
Yeah.
And they were expressing their frustration. They didn't want a lockout. They wanted football. And yours truly was probably in the middle of that. So I got it. And then in Philadelphia, that was quite a scene too. I mean, to have 100,000 people, I couldn't even see that far.
Right.
But it was fun because, again, you're interacting with the fans and they're expressing themselves. And, you know, that's part of, I think, what the game of football and why people love sports is to have that opportunity.
Well, now you know what it feels like to be a Jet quarterback. Under Roger Goodell, the NFL has done an excellent job of highlighting the accomplishments of its star players. In 2019, for instance, fans were well aware of the record-breaking feats of future Hall of Famers Tom Brady and Drew Brees, which are truly amazing, as well as the exploits of rookie sensations such as 49ers defensive end Nick Bosa. And I got to say that we do have a great group of young players in this league, as well as the Drew Brees and the Tom Brady's of the world that do represent the past. But when you see and you shake the hands of guys like Nick Bosa and Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and on it goes, what does that feel like for you as the commissioner of the NFL, watching them?
It's rewarding because, you know, obviously, everyone has an opinion about how successful they're going to be on the NFL level. That was true with Kyler this year. And to see him out there playing as well as he's playing and as quickly as they're playing. You know, it used to be the rule was you were an NFL quarterback, you had to come in and sit for a couple of years.
My group wasn't smart enough. We couldn't start right away. These kids all go out there and play right now.
You have to sit and learn. Yeah. Well, these kids are going out there and they're changing the game. These guys are playing at incredible levels. And when you see that, it's rewarding to see because that's the future of the game. Right. These guys really are changing the game out there.
You know, because the game is so popular and because there are so many controversial issues that you have to deal with on a daily basis, can you actually put your head on the pillow at night and fall asleep without having to worry about waking up in the middle of the night?
You know, I'm so tired at the end of the day, and, you know, I stay up for every game. I love it, and it energizes me. So, yeah, I can go to sleep at night. I always worry about everything. I think of everything as competition or everything as a potential impact on the NFL. And I think that's what keeps you sharp. I think that's what keeps you on your toes. And we always focus on how do we get better.
If I said to you, your job description is what? How could you explain that in one sentence?
You know, to take this great American treasure, the NFL, and make it better. And, you know, that has so many aspects to it. It's the quality of the game itself, the health and safety of our players, to continue to improve that. It's making our game available to fans on every different platform and trying to make sure we are where our fans are or where we need to develop them, including internationally. If we keep the game strong and continue to build it, we're going to be successful for the long term.
What's the most difficult part of your job?
I have to make a lot of decisions. I know that our going to not satisfy everybody, but that's what you do. It's like a game official. They're going to make a call. They're going to make half the people unhappy and half the people are happy. What I try to focus on, what's best for the game, short and long term? What do we do to make sure our game continues to be successful and gross?
I just wonder if people realize you work for 32 billionaires and they all have an opinion.
Yes,
and they all want their team to be number one. And that is that's a juggling act that takes quite a magician, if you ask me.
Well, the other thing they probably don't understand is that for us to really do anything in the NFL, it takes 24 or 32 votes of those billionaires. And so they have different perspectives, but that's also the strength of our league because we take those different perspectives and we work to try to find a solution that will get the 24 necessary votes. And if you do, you usually have a pretty good solution. And I think that's really the strength, the fundamental strength of our league.
I know how competitive it is on the field. I can't even imagine how competitive it is in the boardroom.
It's also entertaining.
Yes, it is very entertaining. All right, you know, the NFL has experienced considerable growth under Roger Goodell in two vital ways, by becoming involved more than ever with Pee Wee League football and high school and college football, and, of course, by showcasing itself on multiple platforms beyond network TV. And first of all, I should say thank you because I'm on the network TV side now, not the playing side. And because of the popularity and the growth and the interest in every team and every player, every coach and every situation, both on the field and off the field, I feel like you should be proud of what you've accomplished here.
Oh, we certainly are. You know, I think the game is more popular than ever. It's people are talking about football all the time. I think it has a lot to do with where we are as a country in many times. We influence where things are, and football just means a great deal to this country. And we're proud of that, and we believe we're stewards of the game, so the health of our game on all levels, as you point out, right down to youth football, is really important to us. And we work with each level of football. We try to find a way to make sure that we're doing the same things on each level. appropriately and to make sure the game is safe and we're teaching the right techniques, because that'll make better football players throughout the system and even when they get to us. But the real issue in growth is going to be not just participation, but on how we continue to build that fan base in a very quickly changing media landscape.
And I'm sure a labor piece has something to do with that as well. You know, as you probably well know, I was a very vocal player rep back in 1987, and that player strike, which was ugly all the way around for all of us
who went through it.
They are, and nobody wins. I'm just, you know, I'm telling today's players, nobody ever wins by that, and that's why there has to be maybe some sort of agreement, hopefully soon, and how confident really are you?
Well, listen, you know, we have a 10-year labor agreement that's worked incredibly well for everybody. I think the players have benefited by it. It's the clubs have benefited by it, and I think our fans have, and our partners have. And so I think all of us have got a labor agreement that works, but, you know, we have to continue to find changes, and we have to consider after 10 years the world's different. So how do we change that, and how do we adapt to make sure that it works for the next 10 years. Yeah. And so that's what we're working on. There have been great discussions. The players have made us better, not just because of their performance on the field, but because of the issues that they brought to us and because of their participation and because of their input. And so that is something that we think needs to continue. It's a partnership. And how do we make each other better and all benefit from that?
All right, and quickly, I was just going to ask you, when you go out and see the teams and see the players individually, how are those discussions with those players, and do you feel like you're in a good place with them?
Well, I do, but, you know, they bring issues. By the way, they, you know, today's communication, they call, they text, they, you know, they send me messages. They come in when they're
here. Do your guys have your cell phone number?
Oh, yeah.
I need your cell phone. I got a few things I want to send you.
But and I love that, and I love the ability for us to have a conversation off the record. I don't tell people when people call. Right. I take it, and I listen to it, I understand it. And they call about everything from a uniform code issue to a rule to a broader issue. And that's great for us. And as I said, they make me better, but they make the league better on so many fronts. And so I couldn't tell you, I am so proud of our players. I'm proud of them, not just because they're great athletes and because of what they do on the field, but more importantly, what they do off the field.
Yeah, I often say 99% of the players do so many great things off the field. Every now and again, somebody's going to go the wrong way. We're back with Roger Goodell, whose latest contract extension as NFL commissioner runs through the 2023 season. He's often stated that the NFL has never been in a better position, like he has said right here, but certainly he has a full agenda that includes plans to continue growing the game and increasing revenues, which ultimately is your job. I mean, you know, you're hired to protect the shield, the integrity of the game, but also grow the game. And interestingly enough, you're growing the game, and the game's moving to Las Vegas. And when I was a player, I wasn't allowed to make an appearance in Las Vegas.
Right.
I wasn't allowed to go on a cruise ship because of gambling and everything else. And now it's become a reality in our world and your world especially. And you have a team now moving to Vegas.
With the Supreme Court decision, it's changed. It's legal. And so we have to adapt to the environment we're in. We obviously spent a great deal of time thinking about that and thinking how the world is changing and how do we fit into it. And it's a positive in many ways, which is that it allows greater engagement and different engagement between fans and the game, and that's a positive. On the negative side, you just have to make sure you protect the integrity of the game. It allows for more risk to players, to officials, to the game itself, that we want to make sure we're very careful with. So we spend a lot of time educating everybody in the NFL on an annual basis of what to do and what not to do.
Just wondering if you ever consulted with Gary Bettman, because they have the Las Vegas you know, Knights out there, and, and they've been going for a couple of years and been very successful.
Yeah, Gary and I talked about it before actually the team started in Las Vegas a couple years ago, and you know, he was very positive about the market and very positive about us entering the market. And the early indications are that team is going to just be incredibly successful in Las Vegas.
It's going to be incredibly successful there. But do you ever worry about, like, cities like Oakland and, you know, what the Oakland Raiders mean to that city and what maybe the Rams meant to St. Louis before Stan Kroenke took them out to L.A.? I mean, how does that make you feel about
you
the
do.
Other side of it?
Listen, a relocation is never good. I'll remind you that the Rams actually started in Los Angeles, so you're bringing them home. But, but it, you know, a relocation and that disenfranchising of the fans and the team is not a positive thing. And it's difficult. And we've had three teams that have actually been in the last several years in temporary facilities. So next year we'll be in Los Angeles with a new stadium. Both the Chargers and the Rams will be playing there. And of course, the Raiders in Vegas. But yes, you never want to see that. We work hard to try to keep our teams where they are. It's a partnership with the community, and sometimes you can't get to a resolution that makes sense for anybody.
I want to ask you one quick question about the Chargers. Are you worried about their fan base in L.A.? It doesn't look like it's all that passionate the way it was down in San Diego.
You can't have that kind of passion after 50 years in 1 year or 2 years. So it's going to take a build, but that's true with the Rams coming back to Los Angeles. We were out of that market for 20 years. But, you know, people spend a lot of time talking about the number of visiting teams that are in a stadium. But, you know, you can go right across the river and see that with other teams. That's a reality of what's happening with technology and the way people are purchasing tickets. Mm-hmm. It's easier to get tickets on the secondary market. You know, you used to have to go out and, quote, unquote, scalp it outside in a hand transaction.
Well, all I can tell you is just keep growing the game, please.
Yes.
And at least I have a place to talk about
it. Thank you for all you do for the game, because it makes a difference, and you know that.
Appreciate it, Roger. Thank you so much to Roger Goodell for joining us today, and to all of you for watching. I'm Boomer Esiason, and I'll see you again soon right here on Game Time. That was great, Roger.
Good.
Thank you.
You're the best.
Thank you so much.
You're awesome with that. Well done.